Welcome to the Howie Silbiger Show on the True Talk Radio Network. Get in on the conversation. Call 1-877-669-1292.
And I'm Howie Silbiger. Welcome to the program. You could call in once again. Number to call 1-877-669-1292. That's 1-877-669-1292 to get in on the conversation here on the Howie Silbiger Show on the True Talk Radio Network. I wanted to start the show off tonight talking about what everyone else is talking about. I don't normally do that. Normally I ignore stuff that everybody's talking about. But I want to talk about this because it is absolutely ridiculous that we're talking about this at all. But it's the way life is, right? There's a guy named Jonathan Glazer. I never heard of him before the Academy Awards were on last night or two nights ago. And I have no idea who he is or what his history is. He's a British guy who makes movies, I guess. But I have to commend him. Now, I've been reading over and over and over again of Jewish sites and Jewish people condemning Jonathan Glazer for his remarks about Gaza and the Israeli war. But I really have to commend him. He refuted his Judaism during the Academy Awards speech. Now, he didn't really refute his Judaism, but he kind of did. At least, though, he's not a hypocrite. He's grounded in reality. You see, Glazer realized that supporting Hamas is the antithesis of what Judaism is, and understood in order to stand with the people who did this indiscriminately raped, murdered, and burned alive innocent men, women, and children, he had to remove himself from the morality and humanity of Judaism. I'm told that Glazer's movie deals with the Holocaust, and I'm positive in his research of the topic, he came across many stories that parallel some of the atrocities committed on October 7th. I'm sure stories tugged at his heartstring, and he realized that over 6 million Jews were murdered because they were Jews. If he didn't, he wouldn't have made the movie. In the end, however, he's a Hollywood Jew, or a former Jew in his case. I have no real... You know, I really don't think he had a connection to Judaism at all, or a connection to God. He worshipped fame and money. He made a Holocaust movie to make money. So I guess renouncing his Judaism really didn't mean much to him. He wasn't a strong Jew to start with. I suppose it was easy to give up something that you really didn't care about. Now, renouncing commercialism or renouncing Hollywood excesses, that probably would have been harder for him. You see, I've met a lot of Jews in my life, like Jonathan Glazer. Jews who felt that they were more humane, they were more human, they were more in touch with humanity than the Jewish community. Jews that felt that they could take a step back and assimilate into society as much as they could, and that way protect themselves from the onslaught of Jew hatred that every Jew in North America, every Jew in the diaspora feels. There are many Jews who feel that the more they assimilate, that the more they become like everybody else, that people will forget that they're Jews. It's not true, and that's not how life works, unfortunately. There were many Germans in Germany, many German Jews in Germany, who were shocked when the Nazis came for them. They were intellectuals. They were the farthest thing you would find from Jews. They would say, we are more German than Jewish. Our allegiance is with the country, not with the religion. Why are we going to concentration camps? Because in the end, and when the final bell tolls, the end result is that Jew haters hate Jews. Now, they don't care if you're a religious Jew, if you're a right-wing Jew, if you're a left-wing Jew. They couldn't give a darn who you are. If you're Jewish, they hate you. Look, just take a look at October 7th. And that's the perfect example of Jew hatred at its best. This is the perfect example. Think about this. You had a bunch of towns on the border of Gaza. Now, these towns were filled with the leftist Jews in Israel. There were no more left-wing Jews than the Jews living in those towns. These were the Jews that rallied and fought for equal rights for Gazans, for more Gazans to come into Israel to work. These were people who picked up Gazans at the border and drove them to the hospital. These were people who cooked food and gave it to their Gazan neighbors, even as rockets rained on their heads. These were peaceniks. These were people who believed in their whole heart that Jews and Arabs could live side by side in peace. These were people who formed the Peace Now movement, people who formed the left-wing movements of Israel, and people who believed heartily that they would one day see either a two-state solution or, even better in their mind, a one-state solution incorporating two people. They were slaughtered by Hamas. Their ideology didn't mean a thing to Hamas. Their hearts and their work towards helping the Arabs of Gaza didn't mean a thing to the Hamas monsters that came over the border on October 7th. They were raped. They were tortured. They were burned alive. And they were murdered. Thousands. Well, little over 1,300. No regard whatsoever to their political ideology, to how religious or irreligious they were, or to even the fact that just a day before or 2 days before the attack, most of the residents of those towns attended a rally which called for Israel to give up Judea Samaria and create a Palestinian state that was completely irrelevant to the murderers that came in to destroy them. Because the goal of the October 7th attack was not to fight for the freedom of Palestine. It wasn't to prove a point politically. The goal of the October 7th attack, as repeated over and over again by the leaders of Hamas, was to kill as many Jews as possible. It was simply a case of sending people in to murder Jews in the most heinous ways possible. Rape them, torture them, burn them alive, shoot them, stab them. Kill them by rape. Whatever you have to do, kill as many Jews as possible. That was the goal. That was the objective. That was the reason for the October 7th attack. Now why, you say? Why would seemingly innocent people, the Gazans, they're nice people. Why would thousands of Gazans decide to cross the border into Israel and commit this heinous attack on people? Why would they do this? Why would they commit this terrible act of attempted genocide? And the answer is simple. Because the Arab-Israel conflict has never been about land. And anyone who tells you it's about land, anyone who tells you that there is a solution and the solution is a two-state solution, anyone who tells you that the resolution to this the thing is that Israel has to give up more land or more concessions is lying to you. Everybody in the region knows. Everybody in politics knows. And pretty much everybody should know that this is a religious war. This war has been a religious war from day one, continues to be a religious war, and will forever be a religious war. The truth of the matter is, quite simply, there is a surah in the Quran that says quite clearly that any land that was ever occupied by a Islamic caliphate is Islamic land forever. So because the Ottoman Empire was an Islamic caliphate, the entire Middle East is considered holy Islamic land, and nobody other than an Islamic ruler could rule over this land. Same thing with Spain. Only an Islamic ruler could rule over Spain, which is why ISIS went after the Middle East and Spain. Why Spain? It seems so random, but because there was an Islamic caliphate that had control over Spain, Spain is Islamic forever. And so if you believe that your military conquest thousands of years ago, taking out the indigenous people of the land, gave you the land in perpetuity and you can never lose it, then it's not hard to believe that, you know, you have to kill the usurpers that are in the land. So if this is holy Muslim land and the Jews have a state there, then the Jews have to be removed. They're infidels. And that is all we are seeing over and over and over again is the leadership of the Arab movement repeating over and over and over again that this is the case. For instance, when Yasser Arafat was offered 98% of everything he asked for, including Jerusalem as his capital by the State of Israel, the only thing he had to do was recognize the existence of the State of Israel, the legitimacy of the State of Israel, whatever was left of it at the time. He refused. He didn't refuse because he cared about the Palestinian people and wanted more. He didn't refuse because he believed that he was getting a raw deal. He wasn't getting a raw deal. He refused because he couldn't justify to the jihadists that he had recognized a Jewish state on holy Islamic land. And because he couldn't recognize that, he couldn't accept the deal. That was one of the conditions of the deal, a non-negotiable condition of the deal. So because he couldn't accept the fact that there was a Jewish state on land that's supposed to be Islamic state, he couldn't make the deal. He walked away from the table, never responded. And so on and so forth. We see it over and over and over again. Take a look at all the peace agreements. The only reason they fell apart was because the Arabs refused to either recognize Israel or accept the fact that Israel exists. If you take a look at the literature that's put out by the Palestinian Authority or by Hamas or by any of these Arab groups, when they talk about Palestine, they're not talking about Judea and Samaria. They're not talking about Gaza. When they talk about Palestine, they're talking about the entire state of Israel. The chant from the river to the sea is not by accident. The chant of the river by the sea is a statement of fact. This is what we want. This is what we're not going to stop until we get. Now, if they get the river to the sea, they get all the land between the river and the sea, Israel disappears. And that is the whole goal. Because a Jewish state cannot exist on the same land that an Islamic caliphate once existed on. So, as long as we realize the truth and we understand that the rest of it is propaganda on both sides. Anyone who claims that this is a land war is living in a bubble. They're living under a rock somewhere. This has never been a land war. Anyone who claims that there is a negotiated settlement to this is living in la-la land. How do you negotiate a religious doctrine? You can't. Every time Israel signed a peace deal with Yasser Arafat or the Palestinian Authority, the answer was, well, this is only the first step in redeeming all of Palestine. So he would say yes in English, and then in Arabic he would tell his people, don't worry, don't worry, don't worry. This is the ruse. We're going to agree to this, and then we're going to continue fighting. Which is why terrorism always restarted, which is why they always found a reason for an intifada, an uprising, which is why Israel has been constantly defending itself since its founding in 1948. It's not by accident. It's by design. The Muslim countries will not accept a Jewish country on what they consider holy Muslim land. Now, why this point is not being made worldwide, I have no idea. I don't understand why everyone's playing with the narrative that there is some kind of solution here, that there's some kind of peace solution. Now, the only solution to this problem, in my view, and you could have a different view, and if you do, you could feel free to call in, 1-877-669-1292. The only reason that I think that people are still playing with the idea that maybe, if we're lucky, there could be some kind of peace agreement, is because Western people who live in Western countries, always have this concept, they always think that everybody in the world thinks the same way they think. That the ideals and the values and the morality of the West is central to everybody else's lives right across the board. And that's not really the way the world works. It's very conceited for the West to think that because they believe in a certain whatever, that everybody else believes in that ideology. It's not true. In the Middle East, historically, The only thing that matters is how strong you are, which is why Arab leaders lie all the time about their military prowess, which is why Israel is feared in the Middle East. Israel defeating the Arab armies in 6 days, Israel defeating the Arab armies is a statement. Don't mess with us. We are stronger than you, and we will bite you, and we will attack you, and we will kill you. A show of force is the only thing that's understood in that region. That is the culture of the region. And the more force you show, and the more you show that you are not going to take it, and you're not going to accept it, the more respect you get in the region. Now, I'm not saying that the region's suddenly going to say, oh, Israel, we respect you because the war in Gaza, you wiped out Hamas. The region's not going to say that. Because, once again, their goal is the destruction of Israel because Israel's on Islamic land. So they're never going to say, Israel, we support you, and Israel, we love you. But what they will say is, maybe we shouldn't attack Israel right now. Maybe we should allow Israel to live in peace and sign some kind of tentative deal with them so that they can live in peace, because right now they could kick our butts, and we don't want our butts kicked. That is a possibility. And if that is the possibility, then we should go for it. But there is no negotiation with an organization that is hell-bound on committing genocide against your people. You can't negotiate with Hamas. The starting point of the negotiation with Hamas would be, we want to kill you, and the starting points on Israel's side would be, well, we're not going to die. If you start negotiation off like that, there's really nowhere to go, right? They're not going to stop wanting to kill you, and you're not going to stop not wanting to die. So there's no negotiation with Hamas. So if you can't negotiate with the people who are trying to kill you, the only solution you have is to kill those people, is to destroy those people so that they don't come and kill you again. They've already succeeded once. You don't want to give them a second shot. So Israel's war in Gaza is a justified, legitimate war. It's a war of survival. If Gaza had not attacked Israel, if the government of Gaza had not attacked Israel, the democratically elected government of Gaza, and how do I know it was democratic? Jimmy Carter was overseeing the election. So therefore, we know for sure it was democratic. The democratically elected government of Gaza decided to attack Israel. Now, you can't be the aggressor and the victim at the same time. It doesn't work. So if I attack you and then you come back and you give me a severe beating, I can't complain that you beat me up. I started the fight. So, you know, if I kick you and you punch me in the face and I break my nose, I really don't have an argument because you started the fight. And you want to talk about proportionality? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't exist when it comes to war. There's no proportional response to a genocidal attack that killed 1,500 of your civilians. What would be proportional? There is no proportional. And this whole thing about, you know, 50% of Gaza being children, it's irrelevant. The fact is that the government of Gaza attacked the government of the State of Israel. The government of the State of Israel said, we are not going to be attacked. Well, they attacked the citizens of the State of Israel. And the government of the State of Israel said, you're not going to attack our citizens. We are not going to take an attack. They also attacked the government by killing soldiers and taking hostages. So if you're going to take hostages, kill soldiers, take hostages, kill civilians, murder them in the most heinous way, burn them alive, rape them, torture them, take hostages, torture the hostages in your dungeons, in your torture dungeons, and then cry victim, the world should be laughing at you, but they're not laughing at you. The world is backing Hamas. And why are they backing Hamas? Quite simply because Hamas is not Jewish. Because the underlying bias in the world is against Jews. Jews are hated. And let's not pretend it's anything else. It really is nothing else. Jews are hated people. I mean, we could take a look at the fact that there was a massacre in Africa the other day. Thousands of people were killed. The genocide's going on there. And nobody seems to care. Why don't they care? Because Jews aren't involved. It's quite simple. Well, what's going on in Ukraine? Do you know what's going on in Ukraine? I don't know what's going on in Ukraine. Because they're not covering Ukraine anymore. Why? Because now once Jews are involved in the war, all the focus goes on to the Jewish war. Now, why the Jews are the center of attention, why the Jews are continuously the center of attention, is way beyond me. It's way beyond my pay scale. I can't answer that question. I have a theory. I can show you the theory. I don't know if my theory is correct, but it seems to me to be correct, and that's why it's my theory. My theory is, and I'll be honest with you, and I've said this before in the show, and I'll say it again and again and again. My theory is that you can't justify your religion if your religion is an offshoot of another religion. So Judaism was the first one, and then Christianity came along, and then Islam came along. When Christianity came along and said, hey, our Bible trumps the Jewish Bible. Our Bible takes over the Jewish Bible. Jewish covenant with God is no longer. Now that we Christians have a covenant with God. That was the Old Testament. This is the New Testament. When they said that, what happened? Jews said, okay, you could worship any way you want. We don't care. We're sticking with our Bible, and you could go with your Bible, and then we're fine with that. The Christian said, no, you have to convert to our Bible. And if you don't convert to our religion, you don't believe in what we believe in, then we are going to kill you. And they had crusades, and they had inquisitions, and they murdered Jews. Because you can't say that the New Testament with God is legitimate when people are still following the Old Testament with God. It's very hard to sell your religion, to sell it, if there are people who are saying, who are still there, who are still following the old stuff. So you got to get rid of them. Either convert them or kill them. And that's what the Christians tried to do with the Crusades. Convert them or kill them. Then, if you go on to the second religion that formed after Judaism, Islam, well, now they have the New Testament, the Quran. And the New Testament usurps the Old Testament and the New Testament. So now it's the New Testament. And the people who follow the New Testament said, hey, wait a second. We can't say that the Islam is the predominant religion. We can't say that this is the true religion, the new covenant with God. While people are still following the old covenant with God and the old covenant with God. So we got to kill them. So jihads against Christians, jihads against Jews, murder, bloodshed, centuries of bloodshed and murder, all to create the impression of dominance over these religions. Go live in an Islamic country. If you're not Islamic, you live as a dhimmi, a second-class citizen who has to ask permission to walk in the streets, who has to pay a tax for living in the town, in the land. So even when they tell you, and they do this a lot, they say, oh no, Jews could live in our countries. It's not true. There are no Jews living in Arab countries. Very few. They were thrown out years ago. You lived as a second-class citizen with very little rights. So here we are. A religious war raging in the Middle East. The idea that a two-state solution is not viable and never will be viable. The Jews would accept it in a second. All they want is peace and to live in peace. The Arabs are never going to accept a two-state solution. It's a religious war, not a land war. So land is not really an issue. It's not really the predominant problem. Stolen land is irrelevant. Nobody cared about the land before Israel was there. And nobody will care about the land if Israel ever leaves. The land is only relevant right now. And anybody only cares about the land right now because Israel's there. If Israel disappeared tomorrow, nobody would care about the land. The Alaska Mosque and the Dome of the Rock would go back into disrepair because they're not really religious symbols for Islam. They became religious symbols when Israel was formed in 1948. So let's be realistic. Let's understand the geopolitical side of this whole thing and understand that there is a lot more to this than the propaganda tells you. So the next time that you say, hey, wait a second, Israel is killing Gazans, they cut off the water into Gaza. That's another one I heard. They cut off the water to Gaza. Well, just remember that just a couple of months ago, the Hamas, just after October 7th, Hamas was bragging. In fact, they released a whole video on it. You could look it up. It's on YouTube. They released a whole video where they showed that they were ripping up water pipes in northern Gaza so they could make rockets. So the water pipes were ripped up by Hamas. Israel's still supplying water to the Gazans, even though they shouldn't be. They're still supplying water to the Gazans. They just redirected the water to southern Gaza. That's where the majority of the population is at the moment. And what about Egypt? How does Egypt factor into this? You know, Hamas shares a border with Egypt. They share a border with Israel. They share a border with Egypt. You don't hear very many people saying, why isn't Egypt opening their border and accepting refugees? In fact, Egypt not only closed their border, but they built a wall, much like Donald Trump's wall, right along their border with Gaza, with barbed wire on the top, 15-foot wall with barbed wire on the top. Not a peep from the world. Why is that? When Israel built a wall to keep terrorists out of their country, it was called an apartheid wall. Israel became an apartheid state. Or at least they were accused of being one. They didn't really become an apartheid state. Why isn't Egypt considered an apartheid state? They just built a border wall taller than any wall that Donald Trump built in the United States. They have not let one Palestinian refugee into Egypt from Gaza. They have not let one truck of aid into Gaza from Egypt. Why is Egypt not being held accountable for this open-air prison that was created by the Israeli blockade? What about the Egyptian blockade? And they've been blockaded for years. No one seems to care about that. Isn't that funny? Isn't it funny that when Egypt blocks Gaza, doesn't allow any aid in, closes the border, builds a border wall, the world remains quiet? When Israel gets attacked by a self-proclaimed genocidal organization that breaks into Israel and kills 1,200 people and it kidnaps over 200 and still holds 130-odd people prisoner, hostages, the world says nothing. The world doesn't care. Hollywood actors at the Academy Awards wear red buttons calling for a ceasefire. Well, a ceasefire could happen tomorrow. The war could be over tomorrow. The war could be over today. Hamas laid down their weapons and surrendered. They released all the hostages. The war would be open today, over today. There's no reason for a ceasefire. Let's end the war. Release the hostages. Surrender as a terrorist group. Relinquish your control over the Gaza Strip. The war is over today. The ball is in Hamas's court, not Israel's. And why nobody wants to admit that, why nobody wants to talk about that, why nobody wants to say that, is lost on me, honestly. I've always believed in saying the truth. I've always believed in talking about reality. I've been doing the show a very, very long time. And it's very rare that I will get on the show and talk about something that I don't believe is true. You know, we all make mistakes, and sometimes we're wrong. And it's extremely rare that I'll get on intentionally give a wrong fact. I don't do that. So it's extremely confusing to me as an honest person why the world is talking, and Israel even is talking about stupidities, about irrelevant stuff. When the truth is that Hamas started the war, Hamas can end the war. All Israel wants is the rockets to stop falling on the heads of their civilians. All Israel wants is their hostages to come home. All Israel wants is to bury their dead and live in peace. That's it. Israel doesn't want anything more than that. Now, the world could call Israel a genocidal country. They could accuse Israel of committing war crimes. They could do whatever they want. But that's the reality. I'm Howie Silberger. Thanks for joining me. I will see you again tomorrow, right here on the True Talk Radio Network.